This Fan Run podcast is brought to you by DraftKings.
DraftKings Sportsbook is not only my favorite sportsbook, but it's America's top-rated sportsbook. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code FANRUN in all caps when you sign up to turn $1 into $100 in free credits. Bet on the basketball team of your choice to win their next game, and if they do, you will claim $100 in free credits. That's promo code FANRUN in all caps for a limited time and only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 or older, Tennessee only. Wager paid out in site credits. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line. 1-800-889-9789.
And hello, good afternoon, and welcome to another stellar edition of The Drive here on Fan Run Radio. Russell Smith punching the time clock, 3:02 on your Tuesday. Welcome in. Hope you're doing well. Thanks for tuning into the show. Bear is here. Rick is here. Matt Huckaba is here. We are locked, loaded, and ready to roll here on a Tuesday afternoon edition of the show. A ton going on here today. I mean, really just getting ready for the College World Series, which is fun. Had a chance to watch Mississippi State last night. They punched their ticket, the final College World Series ticket, and so we're all set now for Omaha.
So how many SEC teams are they going to be? Tennessee, Mississippi State, and
Vanderbilt.
Vanderbilt. Okay, so three. And they started out to be six in the Super Regional round. Is that correct? Yeah. All right, not bad.
Three out of eight. As I said yesterday, I was pulling for Notre Dame. I don't know, I said pulling for Notre Dame, but
I'm glad we're not going to have to see those stupid helmets, though.
So. Yeah, I felt like it would have added some exclusivity if it was Tennessee and Vanderbilt, and I feel like that would have been good for the state and good for the program and all that stuff. But Mississippi State earned it. Man, they have an awesome baseball stadium.
Yeah, they really do.
Very envious watching that. I mean, that looked like a fun time. When they're showing their outfield seats, it doesn't even look like there are seats. It just looks like this massive people and grills and beer. It's just a party over there. And then the stadium around the bases and everything is, I mean, it looks like Major League quality.
No, you're right. I mean, there are, it's basically a double decker in the outfield. It's not even just kind of that first row of seats, if you will, but they have multiple rows of seats. You have the gigantic lofts on the in the left field side. I mean, it really does look like a little bit smaller minor league stadium almost.
Wow, Rick Butler's voice still.
I know.
It's, you sound worse today than you did yesterday.
Do you really think so?
You're a little hoarse.
It's going to make me really self-conscious now. I thought I was doing a little bit better.
You'll be fine, but it's amazing.
Well, I guess that's the thing is I did not realize game day etiquette. You're gone for so long, you don't realize that you got to pace yourself. So I totally screwed my voice.
Rookie mistake. Wow, he sounds rough, man. You going to be okay? You going to be able to make it 3 hours?
Yeah, I mean, again, I kind of felt like I was doing better today than yesterday, but now I'm just very self-conscious about it.
Oh, no, don't worry about it. Don't worry.
I think I got one more day.
Don't let it get in your head.
One more day.
One more day?
Of sounding like this?
Oh, and then you'll be back to normal?
Yeah.
Well, that'll be good because you'll be back to normal Thursday. We're going to be live at Jets Pizza in Farragut for round one of the U.S. Open. Phil Mickelson. It's going to be an interesting storyline, man. What a great sports weekend. The only thing, well, I guess with the U.S. Open being out on the left coast, Sunday could be a really fun day. If we go ahead and take care of business against Virginia, we could be sitting in here, Bear, doing voluntary action, watching the final round of the U.S. Open. That could be a pleasant Sunday evening.
It sure could. I'm glad we're not looking down the barrel at Saturday and Sunday, though. It's been a minute since we've had a day off.
Yeah. No, not for me. A whole week of vacation a couple weeks ago. But we'll put that out for you. So
my vacation's going to involve a rather large incision.
Yeah. Have we updated people on that? We'll talk about that later. What you got going on?
I'm not much to tell. The plan worked. I'm going to have the surgery here in a few weeks.
All right, go ahead. You did the chemo and the radiation.
That was miserable.
Shrunk your tumor down.
Yeah.
That's over with, and now you're just waiting. You have an operation to remove the tumor.
They're going to go in there and cut it out. Now, Rick, believe it or not, Rick and GP3 took the brunt of that week you were on vacation. That was all to hell, wasn't it?
Well, I mean, yeah, I think that was certainly a crazy week. But I got to say, I mean, for anybody who's been listening, I really don't know when you would have been able to tell when Bear has been going through this or kind of what days, what is happening. It's incredibly impressive to me to be sitting here right now knowing what all has been happening and still knowing that he's been on the radio from 3 to 6 almost every single day without change. It's incredibly impressive.
Very impressive. And so you have the operation, what, the first week in June or July?
Somewhere in there, yeah. I'll find out Friday.
And you're going to miss some time after that.
I'll definitely be gone for at least a week.
Okay. We'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
I mean, but if you challenge me, I will take my computer and my headset. And I will broadcast live from the ICU. If it comes to it, I will.
You are going to be the Eric Berry of our radio's recovery team.
Ooh. I like that.
It's a pretty good comparison.
The young man, I guess he's not really a young man. To me, as he's to always be a young man. Inspirational. The way he carried himself. And you just got a 80% of this, according to everybody who knows anything about all this stuff, is attitude. And I've just tried to maintain a positive attitude. So, but yeah, looking forward to putting this in the rearview mirror.
Just be ready to go for football season, big fella. We need
you. I'll be jumping up and down on the kickoff team on opening night.
We need you.
Ready to bang heads.
Here on Fan Run. Yeah, man, the Mississippi State, they just opened a can on Notre Dame. So we've got Virginia Sunday, and then Texas and Mississippi State are the other teams on our side of the bracket. So Virginia on Sunday, and then we will play either Texas, Mississippi, or Mississippi State on either Monday or Tuesday. If we win, we play the winner of that game on Tuesday. If we lose, we play the loser of that the other game on Monday. It would be two in a row. Let's win. That would be my strong preference. And Tony Vitello's, if I'm guessing. I feel good about it, man. My preliminary research says that Texas is pretty good. Apparently, they've got two really good pitchers, and they can hit it a little bit. The stadium out there is much bigger. I saw some people expressing some mild anxiety over that. And to me, though, I look at it two ways. Yes, we hit a lot of home runs, and that does not bode well for a team that hits a lot of home runs. But we've also had a dominant pitching staff. Several people have made this point. We led the league in ERA despite playing in the quote-unquote small confines of Lindsey Nelson Stadium. So if we have solid pitching and we're going out to a bigger ballpark, shouldn't that mean even less home runs hit against us?
Yeah, I would imagine so. But do you worry at all that Tennessee does rely a lot on the long ball? So maybe moving into a more permanent, deeper stadium, I guess you could say, do you worry at all that could play to a disadvantage for Tennessee?
A little bit.
We're a big home run team.
A little bit.
Especially as of late.
But as I said, I think the home runs in college baseball are so noticeable that I think we oftentimes overlook the pitching aspect of it. And we've had really good pitching. I think it puts a premium on defense because more balls are going to stay in play, and you're going to have to limit the errors as much as you possibly can. And I do think that if you're Tony Vitello, and I think you have to give some consideration to perhaps altering your approach a little bit. And this team, we've seen them be very selective with the bunting and the small ball. But if you're going to be in some close games, which I'm assuming we are because everybody who's made it this far is pretty good, then I think that you have to take some opportunities to manufacture some runs. And if you play a little bit of small ball, I don't have a problem with that this weekend. I mean, I wouldn't do that exclusively. And obviously there are some guys in our lineup that I would not want to take the bat out of their hands necessarily.
Gilbert.
But really all of them. I don't know who you would. But, I mean, I think it's interesting on Sunday we did have a situation, I think, where we had runners on first and second with nobody out and Max Ferguson up facing a right-handed pitcher, and he laid down a bunt. And
The big thing is if we're going to win this thing, you can't leave like the bases loaded.
Yeah.
You can't strand runners on. You got to score.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Tennessee certainly, I think, has gotten caught at times, whether it's been in the regular season, whether it's been in one of these tournaments so far, gotten caught a couple of times. And you can certainly see in those losses where, you know, you wind up with like two runs in the game. You know, they strand 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 even sometimes. So that is certainly an area where, you know, it's very parallel with the losses, especially the ones that are, again, 2 to 3 run games.
Football news, roster movement today. Malachi Wideman has left the program. Another disappointing end to what was a pretty highly touted recruit for the Jeremy Pruitt era. Malachi Wideman, we hardly knew ye. I had even forgotten. He did have one minor contribution. I had forgot about it. John Reed was talking about it. He had the catch. He caught the first good Harrison Bailey ball. Remember in the Kentucky game, we're getting blown away, and Harrison Bailey comes in to make his debut. He throws a nice fade down the left sideline. Malachi Wideman climbed the ladder and snared it. And at the time, you're thinking, perhaps that's a glimpse of the future, but no.
You're right. For a guy who was in 6 games, doesn't really feel like it.
4-star wide receiver from Florida. Chose Tennessee over Florida State. You remember he was a great dual sport athlete, had the terrific highlight reel. No matter how many times this happens, we recruit a guy in football who's also a good basketball player, and we have to go through that whole song and dance of, oh, is he going to play? We saw that highlight reel. He can really dunk it. Is he going to play basketball? And we tell you no, because that never happens anymore. But this guy's special. I seen him dunk a basketball. He's really good. And it's like, no, I think Rick Barnes has a lot of talent on his pro. I don't think he's going to play anybody that's half in on basketball. And not only did this guy not play basketball, he didn't play much football for Tennessee.
No.
So
he sure didn't.
Malachi Wideman, we hardly knew you. That's disappointing, man. I thought that maybe with, you know, I'm sure Heupel had some familiarity there from his time at Central Florida. Obviously, he was ticketed to bigger and better things, but you thought, man, you know, maybe this is a guy that can unlock the best out of a talented wide receiver, and no, we're not going to get to see that.
Nope, I think you're right. Disappointing, but still, you got a lot of talent on the offensive side of the ball right now, and especially in that wide receiver room, so I don't necessarily think you're going to be lacking in talent in that department necessarily, but you're right. Definitely a disappointing loss after, again, we hardly knew ye.
Trey Wallace is going to join the show. Coming up here in just a few minutes, we'll get his take on Wideman, the inside story, what happened there, why he's not
good stuff
going to Tennessee, and what that means for Tennessee's wide receiver crew and Josh Heupel's offense coming up this season. Also get his thoughts on headed out to Omaha. Boy, I just imagine the ride in Tony Vantello with me driving and Bear and Trey together for a 12-hour ride. The seventh circle of hell, I'm picturing just like we wouldn't even make it out of Knox County before those two are out on the side of the road brawling.
Be a short fight. I mean, I'd be fine as long as I had my earbuds and was completely and thoroughly intoxicated.
Like I said, seventh circle of hell.
It never happened. I know better than to get in a car for more than – I don't go anywhere that requires a drive of – the outer limit is 6 hours. I will drive to Isle of Palms, Charleston, Folly Beach, that area.
That's 7 hours, bro.
No, it's not. 6. Made it back in 540 last time.
Now, I know that you always accuse me of being a reckless driver.
You are.
I drive.
You're
a
horrible driver.
To quote the wolf from Pulp Fiction, I drive really fast. I don't deny it. I drive.
I'm a lot better driver than you.
I drive really fast, and I don't stop a lot on that ride. I've made that trip count well over 100 times in my life, right. Knoxville to Charleston. You ain't making that. You're not making that trip in 6 hours.
You want to bet?
Yes. Whatever you how fast are you driving? Because you're clearly not stopping, and you're banking on no traffic at all.
Well, you have to plan ahead. You have to leave at a certain time to avoid the traffic. The only hang up sometimes is when you're trying to get through Columbia. Godforsaken hellhole that it is.
No, the worst is getting through Asheville now, and they've only got it down to one lane to get off 40 onto 26. That's a debacle depending on what time you hit it.
Well, that's where planning comes in. But yeah. I don't like being in a car for more than 6 hours. Hour limit. Then I start getting antsy.
And get you on this flight with Bezos to space. Bear in space. Space, space, space. Stay with us. The drive continues. We've got Trey Wallace coming up next. Get his thoughts on Tony Vitello, the trip to Omaha, Tennessee football, whatever else is on his mind. Coming up next right here on Fan Run Radio.
The Drive.
Fan Run Radio, The Drive continues. Russell LeBaire cruises along with you. Pleased to be joined right now by Trey Wallace, RTI. Good afternoon, Trey. How are you, sir?
Hello there, Russell. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well, man. We're going to Omaha. It's all good.
Going to Omaha.
Omaha. Omaha.
Already scouting out for casinos. Looking forward to it.
They have casinos in Nebraska?
Well, it's about 2 miles across the border into Iowa. So I just have to cross a bridge.
They got casinos in Iowa.
Yeah.
I have to admit, this is a part of the country that I'm thoroughly unfamiliar with.
I think it's like on an Indian reservation. So they have like three different casinos right there, right across the river. So pretty excited about it, actually.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun trip. Now, are you driving or are the RTI guys springing for the private jet?
Am I driving? No. Private jet takes off Saturday morning. Should land about 2 hours later in Omaha.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. High roller Trey Wallace.
Fancy.
Fancy schmancy.
Looking forward to it. I don't know. I couldn't make that. I really couldn't. I don't know if me and Bear can make that drive. Like, literally, I'd probably have to knock him out with some kind of medication and hope he doesn't wake up.
I'd have
until
to sedate both of you. That would be the.
Trust me, I would counteract any attempts to sedate me with uppers.
Okay, all right. Trey, it's unbelievable. We was talking last summer during the COVID summer with Vitello, and we started having him on regularly, and he made that comment on the show last year about last year's team had the look of an Omaha team. It's something that he had said several times to us, and I think a lot of us were kind of like, okay, whatever, Tony. He's hyping up his program. He's marketing himself and everything. It's only your third year here in the SEC. Like, let's pump the brakes a little bit before we start talking about that. And then he comes back this year without the star power. You look at the guys that he lost off last year's team, Solari, Garrett Crochet, and then he loses his best pitcher before the season starts with Jackson Leith going on the shelf. And yet he's able to take this squad to Omaha. Trey, it's just been a remarkable season and team to follow for Tennessee baseball.
Yeah, you know what? And it's pretty cool. Like, if you remember, like we were in studio. We weren't in studio, but we were talking to Tony after everything got shut down. I think I remember us talking to him that day or the day after everything got shut down last year. And you could just tell the way that he was talking and talking about his team that he felt like they had a lot of promise last year, which I think that they did. I think they could have made a run to Omaha with what they have. But, to go from where they were, and then that conversation that we, you know, all had with him, and then the fact that we're sitting here now on a Tuesday, and Tennessee's going to take off tomorrow and head to Omaha to play in the College World Series. Man, it's been a crazy 10 months. And the fact that Tennessee's got here, I think that just goes to show you the belief that the players have in Tony and what Tony Vitello has done for the program and the way that he's been able to build it up. Because, you know, and also, like, look at those crowds this past weekend and even the regionals that they hosted. You know, without Tony doing a really good job of marketing the program and coming on shows like The Drive and building up Tennessee and talking about it and wanting to have conversations, you know, I don't know how packed it would have been. But the winning bug seemed to catch on, and it's really cool to see, you know, the fans be able to have something to cheer about as well. So, you know, they're excited, and they're going out there to win a trophy. They don't want to go out there and, you know, play Sunday and Tuesday and come back on Wednesday. They want to be there for 14 days. And you know what? It's something I think they have an opportunity to do.
Do you see the DX video that Callum Vall did on Twitter?
That was pretty funny. I'm not going to lie. That was really good.
It's so good, man. So good. I wish I had those video editing skills, man. That's fantastic.
They play the villain role really well.
Yeah.
Man. And like, but they don't care. Here's the thing, too. They just don't care about you. They don't. They did not care. You know, Jake Rucker, he doesn't care that Paul Maneri is retiring. Drew Gilbert doesn't care. They went into that game looking for blood, and they got it. And I just think that's the mental mindset of this team, that they ride behind their head coach, and it really doesn't matter what kind of outside noise. Just think about all the outside noise that's been going on for the last 2 weeks, coming back and losing after losing to Arkansas in the SEC tournament, taking care of the, quote, group of death like Tony talked about, you know, in the regional, and then coming back, oh, man, Paul Maneri coming in, you know what, the retirement tour, maybe that, you know, they don't want it to end right now, you know, look out for LSU, and then they just shut them down. I just think this team has such a great mental mindset and aspect about baseball that they're going into Omaha, you know, guns a slinging. It's going to be fun to watch.
Is the Vitello leaving talk, that seems like it's subsided dramatically from where it was, say, a month or so ago. Do you think that those contract negotiations are pretty far along at this point? And should you, Tennessee fans, be worried at all about that LSU job continuing to stay open?
No, I think, well, no. And I've been told by numerous people that contract negotiations are well along down the road. Lindsey Nelson Stadium pledge money from donors is pretty much secured for the first phase of it, I guess you could say. And then, you know, with the LSU job, you've kind of mentioned this too. LSU job has been kind of hard to fill. You know, first they quietly went after Sullivan from Florida. You know, the athletic director even talked to him. And then, you know, that kind of went haywire. There was some off-the-field stuff, whatever. And then they were going after Paul Casey, you know, from Oregon State head coach. Well, then that kind of went away. And now they're going after Mike Bianco at Ole Miss is what Glenn Gilbo is reporting. You know, I was always told during this process when LSU opened up that Tony Vitello was fourth on the list. Talking with numerous people, I came to the conclusion, talking with other people in town, that he was about fourth or fifth on LSU's list. And I think that Tony will be back next year. I think it would be dumb to not talk to LSU if they wanted to, because it's always good to have that type of practice and everything along those lines. And LSU is a top job in the country. But as we sit here right now and the way Tony's been talking and the contract stuff that's going on, Tennessee's going to take care of him. And I think Tennessee has their head coach for the future in Tony Vitello. I just don't see him going anywhere.
Yeah, that scares me, though. I don't want him even talking to them, man, because you just worry. You get a guy in a room, you make an impression on him, wave a bunch of money in his face, and who knows what happens. But I get the feeling.
I mean, the money won't be a big thing, though. I mean, I get where you're coming from, but if you're talking about amenities and what LSU baseball is, okay, I could see that part. But Tony's building something here. And if you can do something like Maneri has done at LSU or Van Horn's done at Arkansas and build up a powerhouse, man, I'd rather have my name on that etched in stone in baseball history compared to trying to go over and take over a program and failing.
It's pretty fun watching last night Mississippi State. We were talking about their stadium before you came on. Man, what a fun time that looks like. Duty Noble Field, I guess they call it down there in Starkville. If you haven't seen it, go invite our listeners to go look up pictures and videos online. Lindsey Nelson certainly pales in comparison to that palace. What do you think? Where do you think the renovation project is at? You had access to the best markups of photos, of renderings, what it would look like the last proposed renovation. Where is that stand, and what do you think it's going to be like this time next year?
I think you're going to see them try to start construction sometime later in the summer if they can. I think you're going to see stuff like a double-decker porch, back porch, you know, outfield. I think you're going to see that area where the bleachers were this weekend down the left field line. I think they're going to just add on to right there where it ends and add on down the left field line with, you know, I don't want to call them stands. I think they're going to be suites there. I think there's going to be, you know, not bleachers, but just regular seats. So I think they extended down that left. I think the first phase of this, and it's going to come in phases. Like, you're not getting all this done in 1 to 2 years. I think the first phase is going to be, okay, let's take care of the porch, and let's also take care of the left field line. Let's make this thing look nicer. Let's make this thing look bigger. But then also, you know, and I don't know what you agree on this or not, but, you know, if I was Tennessee, I'd make part of the first phase redoing the outside of the stadium, because it looks like you're walking into a prison, you know, when you come up to Lindsey Nelson Stadium. I just personally think that should be one of the things that is in phase one of this project. And maybe it is, but they've got to do something about the exterior of it, because it just looks horrible from the outside looking in.
There's so many things that need to be done. And I think the interesting calculus that Danny White's got to perform is, like, he, you know, this is a non-revenue sport, right? And it doesn't make a lot of money. Even the quote-unquote big programs, LSU, Mississippi State, Texas A&M, don't make a lot of money playing baseball, certainly not in comparison to football and basketball. So, you know, Danny White's looking at this terrible financial situation that he's inherited, and now you have this huge demand from Tennessee fans and their hugely popular baseball coach to invest all this money in the facility of a non-revenue sport while your football program and your stadium is literally crumbling over there. So he's got to look at it and say, well, what's going to make me money in baseball? It's going to be luxury suites. It's going to be club seats. The porch is certainly a part of that. So he's got to do that. But Vitello, I'm imagining, wants the outside of the stadium, like you're talking about, done so that he can bring recruits and show it off and actually have it stack up to what they're seeing at LSU and Mississippi State and Arkansas. So it's just it's all that stuff has to be done, right? It all has to be done. We've let it go way too long, and now it has to be brought up to date. And it's just, I don't know where you start, but it's going to be interesting. It's something that I don't think they can get it all done in 1 year, Trey. I think this is like a multi-year.
Like a 3 to 4 year type deal?
Yeah. Think? Like here, 3-4 years from now, hopefully we're sitting with a national championship banner, a couple of appearances in Omaha, and Tony Vitello just rocking and rolling, and a huge, pristine Lindsey Nelson Stadium.
No, and I agree with you. 100% I agree with you. I don't think, yeah, this thing is not getting done, you know, within a year. I mean, I don't think it can get done within 2 years. But, yeah, if they take the time and they do it the right way, brother, and they, you know, put together a stadium that – put together something that looks architecturally nice. You never go – Tennessee's not going to do anything like Mississippi State did last night where they've got apartment suites in left field, you know, that you can rent out or you can buy and stay in and all that stuff. Right. And it's absolutely gorgeous. you know.
They've got those things down there?
Oh, yeah. They've got apartment, brother, in left field.
Wow. The only place I've ever heard of that is at a couple of the NASCAR tracks.
No, they call it the Lodge, the big old brick building out in left field with patios looking over the stadium, like 4 or 5 stories tall.
I looked it up. It's it was $7,500 to rent per game. I felt like looking it up. I don't know why I did. Wow. But, yeah, so, I mean, so it'll be interesting to see a timeline for Tennessee. I think that they'll be smart about it. I think that the funds will be there for them to go ahead with phase one of this thing. I think Danny White is doing a good job trying to put that together. But now, you know, you got to do it. No more talk. Like, no more talk that you're going to do this. They've been talking for years about Lindsey Duff Stadium. No more talk. Like, if you're promising Tony V this, you better give Tony V this. Because, you know, if not, he'll just go full Italian on you, and he'll make you get it the hard way.
I don't even know what that means, but I'll let folks speculate. Yeah. Trey, you had a question to Danny White when he did his press conference last week. I thought it was really interesting at the end. You asked him, has he had many direct conversations with Tony Vitello and his representation about his new contract going forward, getting him a raise for him and his assistants? And Danny White said something to the effect, I'm paraphrasing here, I've had a lot of conversations with my donors about upgrading his stadium.
Right.
Like, just completely did not answer your question. What did you make of that?
I'll put it to you this way. In talking with some folks, there haven't been a lot of long conversations between Danny White and Tony V. They've more or less been a little bit of 30 minutes here, 30 minutes there type of deal. Tony Vitello also doesn't want to deal with his contract right now. That's why Tony Vitello hired CAA. Everybody knows who CAA is. Jimmy Sexton is a part of that group. He's hired them to handle this stuff and to talk to Danny White and let them deal with it. Because Tony's trying to win a championship, and I completely understand it. But I didn't like the way Danny White skirted around the question, because he could have easily said, yeah, look, we're discussing an extension, stuff like that. We're going to take care of Tony Vitello. He didn't say that. He went straight to the stadium. And I get part of keeping Tony Vitello is doing something with the stadium. If I was Danny White, I'd have come out and said, yeah. You know, we're doing everything we can to keep Tony Vitello here. He is a main priority for us. We do not want him going anywhere else. We're going to pay him what he's worth. Maybe not say that, but, you know, he could have made the statement a lot better than what he did.
But
I mean, you
remember the rumor. They're still out there. We talked about him when you were on the show with us, about Danny White and Jimmy Sexton. Maybe they had a falling out. Maybe they don't talk. Maybe some people say he refuses to negotiate with Jimmy Sexton. Do you think that what I took, and this is just me reading into it, I could be wrong, set me straight if I am. I took that to mean I'm not handling the guy's contract. Maybe there are other people, boosters, other administrators, Randy Boyd, somebody at UT that's handling the contract negotiations of it. And so he didn't address that part of the question, just said, I'm doing the stadium.
It would not surprise me one bit if Tennessee goes full Rick Barnes. And when I say that, I mean Randy Boyd and some boosters getting the money together to handle Tony Vitello's contract, his assistant coach's contract, and also stadium plans.
Can we not have an athletics director that does his job and handles negotiations for coach? Why does Randy Boyd have to step in every time we have a popular coach that might leave? The athletics director's like, yeah, whatever, and Randy Boyd, thank God, is able to step in and raise the necessary money to keep him.
I don't know, dude. No, I really don't know. And that's why that question was weird. Well, let me rephrase it. That's why the answer was weird last week when I got it. I don't know. Maybe he is. He just don't want to talk about it. But, you know, he's been down this road before. He did the same thing at Ole Miss when it comes to putting stadiums together and helping out with coaches' contracts and all that stuff. So I don't see why it would be a problem now unless he makes it a problem. And for Tennessee fans, let's hope Danny White doesn't make it a problem.
Speaking of Danny White, while we have been on this call, Trey, I'm sure you've seen this. You're a multitasker. I'm sure you're on. You have one eye on the Twitter sphere. Tennessee announcing full capacity at Neyland Stadium this fall. no big surprise there, but I guess it's good to see it in writing officially. And this will be the 100th year of Neyland Stadium. I'm sure they're going to have some cool celebrations planned around that. And this will be the last year that before Neyland Stadium, they start working on that. That place is going to look a little bit different starting in 2022.
That's the cool part. Like, if anything that's came out of what football program has done over the last 4 or 5 months, the being able to get the stadium renovated is the part that needed to be first. You got to do something to entice fans to come. I mean, they just went through a whole football season where they got to sit at home and have the beers and watch it on TV and not have to worry about going to a stadium and parking. I mean, even when Tennessee opened up the crowd to more, you know, what was it, 25-30% at the end of the season, whatever, they still couldn't sell out the tickets that they had. So, and I get it, it was COVID and all that stuff. People are worried. I understand that completely, but they needed to do something to make things interesting in Knoxville when it comes to football. I don't want to say it got old, but it was the same damn thing every year. And you walk into Neyland, and, you know, the stadium kind of looks rough in certain areas, you know, in the interior, if you really look at it. You know, so they needed that. And to get that type of money, too, they're going to have to raise the funds. So what do they do? Okay. The west side of the stadium, the first 20 rows, 25 rows up, you know, down the line, they're going to make it, you know, like club seating, and they're going to have a bar down there in that area where they can go hang out. And then in the upper deck, it's going to be like a party deck. They're going to have a big old jumbotron, and then have bars up there, and people can hang out and stand up, and it's like a general admission area. So I think it's very smart what Tennessee is trying to do with football. I'm glad they've already got some funds secured. And the fact that, I'll leave it at this, the fact that they've already got a set date to be like, hey, look, we're going to have this thing done by the 2022 season. Okay, that tells me they've already got the funding to do this, and they're going to start after the last game of the 21 season and get that thing up and going. So Tennessee needs it. They need to add something kind of different to the feel. I know some fans are like, oh, don't change history and all that type of stuff, but it was time. It was time.
Malachi Wideman gone. That was a guy that everybody had high hopes for when he signed. Sounded like a potential replacement for Jennings and Callaway, a strong wide receiver, big, strong guy who can jump out of the gym, and he is gone before he ever has a chance to make an impact. What does that mean for Tennessee's offense this fall?
He could have been somebody in the rotation. He flashed a little bit last year at times. I know he only had one catch, but, you know, in practice he was flashing, and he even got to see his speed down the field. But, man, when you are a football player and you can't take care of things off the field, you're not going to get an opportunity to play on the field. And that's what it came down to with Malachi Wideman. He's not even in the transfer portal yet. He didn't come back when the players reported back beginning of June. And you saw where he barely went through spring practice. He was indoors. I saw him the first 2 days of spring practice, and then he was never seen again. And I was just told that, you know, he needed to handle some things off the field, and he didn't, and that's why he's not a part of the football program anymore.
What else is going on with the football team right now?
I would expect Aaron Beasley back within the next week.
The cat guy?
Yep. I expect him back on the football. You know, I hate to put a timeline, say next week, but I expect Aaron Beasley to be back with the football program, be reinstated into the football program, and be participating in team activities. Let's just throw a date. I'll say before the end of June.
We're not going to have PETA marching on campus before our games, are we?
No, after doing some digging, man, I think a little bit of that story was it's hard to say. I get on here with you guys, and I feel like I can just say anything sometimes. I think a little bit of that story was misconstrued. I'll just say that after talking with some folks. And that's why he's being afforded the opportunity to come back and play football with Tennessee.
So he wasn't performing there'd have to be a substantial
misrepresentation of what went on the day with the animal for me to be comfortable with him coming back.
Well, I mean, if Tennessee is comfortable with him coming back and they've agreed as of last week to let him come back to the team, they would have to understand that the PR nightmare that would come their way if they didn't have reasonable doubt to believe that they're, you know, they can handle everything, right? And you're, I mean, I agree.
I mean, it doesn't need to be doubt. I think that I feel like they're going to need to have like hard evidence at that.
To me, I just feel like if I'm somewhat of a public figure and he is like, and I'm accused of, they said he threw a cat or so. I can't remember the. But, I mean, he basically.
They said he threw a cat, dunked it in the toilet, and kicked it in the kidneys, and had brain trauma and all that stuff. I've actually seen the veterinary records. Yeah,
of course you have.
But if I had been accused of that publicly, and there were news stories, right, and everybody's mad at, I would be screaming from the highest mountaintop, which in 2021 is Facebook and Twitter. I would have a long post saying these allegations are absolutely false. I have been misrepresented. I would never harm an animal. I look forward to clearing my good name. It absolutely did not happen.
Yep, Bill, I'll throw it to you another way. We haven't talked about Aaron Beasley in 2 months, and he's been suspended, and we also haven't talked about any of the cat issues. So, and I get it, it's because he's been suspended, but he was never kicked off the team like Isaac Washington was and Martavius French.
Yeah, you
know,
I mean, I hope
they can say they went into the portal, but let's be honest, we all know what happened with those two players out of the whole situation. So, in my opinion, I see it from both sides. Yeah, okay, you can come out screaming that this didn't happen, or you can let the crazy thing die down, and then when the right time comes, you put out your story, and you go after everybody that only gave one side of it and not the other.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I obviously hope it's not true.
And that's just me thinking out loud here. Right. I mean, that's just me thinking out loud how it could play out, but... You know, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what the response would be and stuff like that. But I expect him back. And Tennessee needs linebackers, and it is what it is. People can form their own opinions once he comes back. And I imagine Tennessee's athletic department is ready to build a statement and put whatever out. So whatever. When that time comes, I think in the next week or two, we'll see it. It's coming.
Tennessee baseball fans worried about TD Ameritrade Park, I believe, is the new Rosenblatt Stadium out in Omaha. It's a big park. We've got a small park. What kind of factor do you think that is, if at all, for Tony Vitello and the Vols this week?
I go back and say, okay, look what they did at Hoover, because Hoover kind of lines up with what TD Ameritrade kind of is. And you saw what Tennessee did out there when it comes to hitting and whatnot. And even just getting the ball in play in the outfield. I mean, how many doubles did we see in that game? You know, where maybe it didn't get out of the park, but at least it got Tennessee in play on the bases. So that's why I get people want to make a big deal out of it because Tennessee hits a lot of home runs, and I completely understand that. And I think Tennessee's going to hit a couple home runs out in Omaha. But I look at it the same way as I would have in Hoover at the SEC tournament, where, you know, they did enough to keep balls in play and hit it to left center, right center, and make things difficult. And I think that's what they'll do out in Omaha, especially against that Virginia pitching in that first matchup.
What do you think is going to happen? Is this team, are we a team of destiny? Is this a team that could go all the way? What do you think, Trey Wallace? What would a Tennessee Vanderbilt championship series mean to this program, this university, this state, and college baseball?
It would – I hate to compare it to football, but, man, it would be a monumental moment in the history of Tennessee athletics to, first off, get to that College World Series, championship series, I guess you could call it, if they would play Vanderbilt, but to win it all, you know, that's a top 10 moment in Tennessee athletic history. Maybe top five, in my opinion. So I think they can do it. I hope I'm out in Omaha for 13 days. I hope I'm not out there for 4 days and that's it. I think Tennessee is in a good spot because of pitching and what they were able to accomplish, not having to throw Heflin, not having to do too much out of the bullpen. And I think they can go out there and get the job done, man. It's going to be tough, man. It's going to be difficult. Virginia's going to be an interesting matchup with their pitching. You know, then you play the Mississippi. If you win that, you play Mississippi State or Texas. And both of them teams, we've seen them play over the last couple nights. They're strong. So if Tennessee can take care of business, win Sunday, Tuesday, and then get 3 days off and come back and play Friday, man, that's huge. So I look at it kind of like, I'll leave it at that. I look at it kind of like the SEC tournament where Tennessee can get through the first two games, get themselves a nice little break, come back, they're ready to go. You even got a couple days off for your pitcher that you might, you know, the best part about it is if you throw Tidwell on Sunday, honestly, you could be able to go Friday if you go 2-0 in the first two games.
Yeah.
I mean, so there's a lot of different variables. So I think Tennessee has a good outing. I'm going to say Tennessee goes to the championship series, but I'm not ready to say they're going to win it all. I just don't know who they're playing.
Trey, great stuff, my man. Have a safe trip out there, and I'm sure we'll chat next week.
Absolutely, buddy. I appreciate you having me on, and if you still would like to get on the private jet, you can make your reservations with me all the way until Friday night.
Oh, man. Okay. All right. I will think about it. Thank you for the invite, Trey. Appreciate it.
See you, bud. See you guys.
I keep trying to think of ways to get out there, and I just can't because I've got a thing Thursday and then Wednesday, and I've already got appointments early next week. It's just – they'll just go and deal with the fallout later. Hey, Russell, why didn't you show up at Jet's Pizza Thursday? Why didn't you show up at Old Ben Franklin Motors Wednesday? Why didn't you do all the things? I don't know. I was in Omaha. What do you want from me?
First time in 16 years.
Quick timeout. The drive continues. It's Fan Run Radio.
Hi, this.
We had another fan man situation.
I'm not sure. Did
See,
we?
You guys don't remember.
I remember
on earth
fan
is that?
Man.
Was it? Was that Bo Holyfield?
That? May have been. Yeah.
There's a big heavyweight title fight in the mid '90s, and I think it's Riddick Bowe and Evander Holyfield. They're sitting there slugging it. It was like the seventh or eighth round. And all of a sudden, some guy just like he's in a parachute. It was one of those outdoor Las Vegas sporting arenas, right? And this guy with a parachute and a big like lawnmower fan pack strapped to his back crashes into the ring. You can go and find this on YouTube. It's the
no way.
It was the craziest thing you ever. And then he crashes. He gets all tangled up in the scaffolding, right? And he crashes into the side of the ring, and the fighters are like, oh, my God. They stop the fight. The fighters' entourages, like Riddick Bowe's guys, grab the guy in the fan, pull him down, and start just beating the crap out of him.
Just wailing on him?
Just wailing on him.
Oh, my God.
And the fight stopped for like half an hour. They're trying to figure out what to do. Get this poor guy out of there who had – I say poor guy. I mean, he's – I guess he kind of got what he deserved.
Fast.
Yeah, and had to get him out of there and wheel him out on a gurney. Fan man on the Holyfield Huckabee.
I gotta go find it.
Mills Lane is the referee. Oh, boxing heavyweight in the heavyweight division.
Let's
boxing
get it on.
Was so awesome in the '90s.
Let's get it on.
So we had one of those, apparently,
yeah.
At the Euros. Some guy came in on
really?
In a fan.
With a paraglider without permission. He just did it.
Yeah.
And then got stuck in a cable wire. Brutal.
Is he all right?
I think so, but this could have gone horribly wrong.
Wow. Stay with us. Hour number two of The Drive. Huckabee's got your top four at four. Coming up next right here on Fan Run Radio.
For The Drive's top four at four.
Hour number two of The Drive underway here. It's Fan Run Radio. Russell LeBear back with you. Top four for this afternoon is brought to you by Bo Kregner and the Kregner Group. They do real estate the right way. Matt Huckabee.
Number one. College World Series is set after Mississippi State dropped the hammer on Notre Dame last night, 11-7.
That one inning, did you watch the game?
Yeah.
It got out of That escalated quickly.
Oh, yeah.
For Mississippi State.
I think it was the second inning. They popped off.
They put up seven or so.
Yeah, they look scary. Vols will play on Sunday at 2 p.m., and I hope we get to miss out on Mississippi State. I hope they get beaten.
Well, you remember we run-ruled them in the SEC tournament.
Which was wild.
Yeah.
Right after Bama,
so,
if I remember correctly.
I ain't scared.
No.
I ain't scared to the Bulldogs.
I'll tell you right now, there's teams I don't want to play, but there are no teams I'm scared of in Omaha.
Certainly not.
No.
You feel good about Vanderbilt?
I'm not scared of Vanderbilt.
Okay.
No, I think especially winning one game at home, I think that was big. If you had gotten swept, totally different outlook right now, I think, to an extent. But at least knowing that we were able to put up big runs on Leiter, I'm not too scared.
I'm not
a healthy
scared.
Respect.
A healthy respect. Like, I would not bet on Tennessee in that situation. I think that's a 50-50 coin flip if we play Vandy. Wouldn't bet on us. Wouldn't bet against us, but wouldn't bet on us.
Sure.
Okay. Neutral site. Number two, George Weister of Fox Sports Radio tweeted last night, "We are on the verge of a story potentially to be broken in the next week that will rock the college football world, ruin legacies, and could impact the balance of power out west. I'm going Alabama. I think they caught Bama."
Well, you're saying out west.
That's not out west.
Well, Pac-12.
The SEC West?
I mean, yeah. The SEC West, it could be like...
I tell you what it is. It's probably if this thing's real, which I still doubt very seriously, I think it would probably be Nike and Oregon.
Why do you think it's not real? Why do you doubt the veracity of the tweet?
Probably somewhat to do with like the whole basketball thing and the FBI, and that was a whole big nothing burger. They ain't touching these guys.
Could be recruits out west.
I don't know if it's a big nothing burger. I mean, Sean Miller lost his job essentially over it. It brought down Patino. I mean, he was kind of tied up in that. And I still think, Will Wade, Bruce Pearl, some of these guys have been able to hang on, but it's not done yet. It's just taking forever. But I think you're right on the Oregon. I mean, that was my thought, too, is they've become such a recruit. Cristobal is really recruiting well over there. I mean, they are loaded this year. And with the lack of competition out there in the Pac-12, they should really dominate. So that was my first thought is something happened with Oregon. Could it be another USC scandal, UCLA, something like that? I don't know, but I kind of looked at it as something going on out west.
Number three just happened. Neyland at 100% capacity. This is following suit with a lot of professional stadiums. I know New Orleans has cleared their stadium for 100%. Looks like we're going back to normal this season.
So I think there'll be a big crowd for the first game, Thursday night game, new coach, first game of the season. I think you'll get a strong 85,000, 90,000 plus in there. What do you guys think of the Pittsburgh game? You think that'll be another big crowd, or are there going to be any 100,000 crowds in there this year?
Opener.
You think
maybe
the opener they could hit?
I really do think the opener could hit, especially with it being that standalone game. But that's a good question, man. I don't know. Only a couple thousand away from max.
Doesn't feel like Georgia is going to be a hugely attended game.
It depends on the season, right? Like, if you win those first four games, that's going to set you up for much better success later on. If you drop one of those, like if you drop the Pittsburgh game, yeah, I'm with you. I don't know what people are going to do.
And then number four, Clippers and Hawks both win their playoff games last night, tying their series at 2-2 each. So got the 76ers that are slacking a little bit. Joel
Embiid. Hawk fans on Talk Sports were all wound up about that.
Oh, yeah. Embiid didn't look very good. And then
there is a nest of them on that show, isn't there? A little cell.
Could the a Hawks fan sleeper cell?
Yeah. In all of them. Wait, Cam Black, that's the only time I've ever seen him actually talk about in any kind of aggressive matter. He will not stand for any Hawk slander.
Do they have a championship caliber team?
I think they can get to the finals. They aren't going to beat the Suns, but.
Well, you're a Suns fan. Wow. I mean, Rick, you're an NBA guy. Do the Hawks have a chance of winning the NBA title this year?
I think they do. I mean, you look at the teams left in the field, and I don't think there's any standout. I think everybody else, everybody left is pretty darn good. And you got to think, I mean, a number five team sitting here tied at two with the number one overall seed. Not too bad. I think anybody left has a good chance.
Should we jump on the Hawks bandwagon?
No. Who's we? You got a mouse in your pocket?
Yeah, the Drive. They're an Atlanta team. They're pretty close.
Not me.
They're on a run. I just never felt, you know, the Grizzlies had their run a couple of years ago. I just never felt 100% comfortable jumping on there because it's Memphis. We jump on the bandwagon. That was met with a resounding indifference. Thank you, Matt Huckapa. Great job on the top four at four this afternoon. It's brought to you, as I say, by Bo Kregner at the Kregner Group. Folks, the housing market, it's insane right now. If you want to make some big money and you want to make it quick, sell your house, man. I mean, it is a seller's market on the high end right now. BoKnowsHouses.com. If you want to contact my friend Bo Kregner, he'll sit down with you, tell you exactly what you need to do to get your home sold quickly and for top dollar right now. He also does Homes for Heroes. There are special discounts out there for military personnel, teachers, first responders, firefighters, folks like that. BoKnowsHouses.com, or you can call Bo directly at 865-742-1035. Again, that's 742-1035. It's all about exposure. You're selling your home, and nobody knows exposure like the Kregner Group. They will get your home seen by as many people as possible, which will drive up the price for you in this very, very special current real estate market. Bo Kregner and the Kregner Group, real estate the right way. So did have a response on the stadium thing. And Callum Vall, who's really owning it on Twitter, man, he drops the Fire DX video earlier today. And I missed this one. Thanks to Firefighter VFL for sending this one to me. Callum earlier today said, for anyone concerned about the field size of TD Ameritrade Park, need I remind you that the Hoover Met is actually larger in every area except dead center. And while in Hoover, the Vols had 16 extra base hits and 7 home runs over 5 games. Didn't seem to be a big hindrance then.
Yeah, I guess not. I mean, it's hard to argue with those stats.
Stout.
I'm not worried about the ballpark dimensions as nearly as much as I'm worried about the caliber of teams that we're going to be playing.
Sure. And I think another factor in it, and we saw this a lot in Hoover, was simply outside factors like wind direction. How many times did we see a home run ball just get stuffed by the wind? You know, so I think there's enough outside factors to where, hey, that's going to be one way or another either way.
Speaking of wind direction, we do something about this vent up here. I mean, it is
it
is freezing.
Please.
It feels fantastic.
This studio right now
feels fantastic.
I'm about to go out and get a jacket on.
I mean, you guys, it's not my fault, mine and Huckabee's fault, that you two guys are real thin and
that's right.
You know, you get cold easy. We're at our optimal operating temperature over here on this side of the room.
I just say the thermostat.
You don't have
war,
the vent over there. We have the vent right here.
Every day I come
right
in
right over my head.
Every day I come in here. And I go back there, and that thing is set at like 65, 66 degrees.
Fantastic.
And I back it off to the what I feel is the reasonable, universally accepted indoor temperature of 72 degrees.
Could I
but
point something out to you,
though? But it takes several hours to warm up.
The reason it's set that low is not necessarily for in here, but during the summertime in the mechanical room. That stuff gets really hot. Really fast.
I'm pretty sure I know. I'm pretty
but
sure,
hey,
it's Houston.
It's all about you, Russ.
It is.
We'll just screw the tens of thousands of dollars worth of fancy equipment we got back there.
Going from 66 on the thermostat to 72 is not going to bust the transmitter here at WKGN.
Whatever, Russ.
I really think it's Houston. After doing the morning a little bit, seeing what those guys do, I 100% think it's Houston. think he comes
nice
in here.
Guy.
I think he cranks it down.
Well, he's kind of burly.
None of us
he's
can do
burly,
anything about
he's
it.
He's a burly boy. Oh, Chris.
Do something about it. I'll just switch it back up.
I think it's fine.
72 degrees is the optimal temperature for an indoor setting, particularly in the summer. I feel like that's pretty cool. I feel like that's pretty cool.
No, I'm with you. Some people who go above, like you're 74, can't do that. But then if you drop it below 70, can't do that as well. It's too cold.
Oh, I'll go up to 74 or so. They say the optimum temperature, some people say, you keep it around 76. Hey, think about it this way, folks. Think about, this is why people talk about, they're on the news, they're on the social media, and they walk around all droopy-eyed thinking that everything's so terrible. It's like, dude, you have indoor air conditioning. This was not something that people even had like 50 years ago. Like 50 years ago. You're just driving in your car in the peak of summer in the middle of July at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. It's 97 degrees outside. You don't have air conditioning. You know what you have? Your elbow out the window of your car. Just more hot July air funneling in and trying to get a little wind in your face. I don't like it. I'm a little sweaty under my arms. 72 degrees inside. Come on, man. Turn it down.
Well, they used to have those windows on cars at the front of them. I had them on my Volkswagen. And you'd, open them, push them out, and the window would jet, outside air directly on you.
What about indoors? What about – I always think about, those famous paintings of – like George Washington and Ben Franklin doing the...
It's like you said a few weeks back on here about something else. Pretty much everybody back then smelled really bad.
Everybody must have stunk.
They didn't have
Think
the
about
odor.
The body odor
oh,
in the hall where they were doing the Declaration of Independence.
Oh, it probably smelled like a goat pen.
It's the middle of summer, Philadelphia, blazing hot, and all those dudes are in there in pantyhose,
powdered wigs,
those wigs, yeah,
and jackets, big crushed velvet jackets, and blouses, and all the other ridiculous clothing men used to wear back then, and their uncomfortable shoes.
Yeah. When did deodorant become casual? Like, when was that an every person kind of thing?
Within the last 100 years.
Wow, I've never thought about how bad did people used to smell. Of course. They'd smell terrible.
For most of human history, people stunk, Rick.
So I have a question for you, and I want to see if you know about this story, and then I want to see if you how likely you are to abide by these rules. Have you seen about the electric Reliability Council of Texas? What's been going on over there?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, that's another thing. It's an energy conservation issue.
Yeah.
The people are running these air conditioners, just your AC, these huge AC units, and you just run them 24/7. It's not good for your electricity bill. It's not good for the environment. It's not good for other people's access to electricity.
So let me go ahead.
I'm a conservationist. That's what I am.
Oh,
turn that thermostat up, folks.
Good on you. So here's what basically they're asking people to do. And again, I want to see how likely you are to abide by these rules. So this company, ERCOT, is asking Texans to, as a whole, to basically lower their energy output from Monday, which was yesterday, until Friday. So here's my task for you. Can you do these three things for an entire week? Number one, they say if you don't need something, we're asking you to turn it off and unplug it if possible.
Okay.
Doesn't seem too hard, right?
No, you can do that. Everybody has a lamp or something in their house that they never use. Go ahead and unplug it.
Number two, turn off all lights and pool pumps and avoid using large appliances like ovens, washing machines, and dryers.
I feel like I could do the oven thing. Washing dryer is going to be a problem.
It's a minor inconvenience, but you could do it if you had to, right? If you felt really compelled to. You could
for a
go
week?
For 5 days. You go 5 days without doing laundry?
Yeah, you'd have to start off with everything clean.
Yeah, that's the big thing, definitely. And then last but not least, so we've kind of been working our way up a little bit, set your thermostat to 78 degrees or higher. Every degree of cooling increases your energy use by about 6 to 8%. So they want you to go
face.
A week.
He looks like, are you stark raving mad, 78 degrees?
here's the wild part about it. There is one city in Texas that doesn't have to do anything with any of this stuff because they were the only ones who had the foresight to be on the national power grid. That's the problem. Texas is its own, except for I think it's El Paso, is all on the Texas power grid. They're not hooked up to the national grid.
You know, and I also find it interesting, like, how do these stadiums play in? Right, like Russell, your in-laws, my parents, they have to, you know, they're being asked to abide by these rules over in Texas. But what about a place like Cowboy Stadium? Like, are they just leaving that thing on?
They didn't do a thing Sunday night with the All-Star race. That thing went off under the lights.
Yeah, I mean, there's
how
just
much power
so many...
to the lights at Texas Motor Speedway use.
Yeah. I feel like these... Some of these stadiums on a game day on a Saturday or Sunday could literally be more than a very small third world country.
I'm fairly certain that's one of the tracks that you could light the interstate from Austin to Chicago just using the lights they use at the track.
I think most people in Texas, in Dallas, Fort Worth, where your folks are from, you tell them you have to go Monday through Friday in the height of summer at 78 degrees on the thermostat. They're going to say, oh, hell no. But I go back to you got to have some perspective, people. You have air conditioning in Texas right now. What do you think they were doing back in the Alamo days? You think Davy Crockett could walk in there in the little mission and flip a? Oh, it's a little toasty in here, Sam Houston. Can you go ahead and dial down the thermostat a little bit? Like at least you have the option. 78 degrees. If you could have told those folks. Back in the day, the Texas Rangers, hey, come on in, boys. The saloon, we've got it set at 78. They would have thought, oh, my God, that's fantastic. I've been out here riding a horse on the Chisholm Trail for the past 3 months in the 90-degree heat, sweating like a dog out here, and now I get to come and drink beer indoors at 78 degrees. They would have thought that's fantastic.
Can't argue. I mean, I can't. Yeah, I wish I could.
The alternative is if you don't follow those things, they're going to have those blackouts like they did back during the winter.
And then you also got the thing like, okay, so to play devil's advocate, obviously you're not wrong, but if you're a Texas resident, you're looking at this thing like, oh, my God, it's June. It's June, mm-hmm. and you're having these problems? We're going to have a miserable summer. Yeah. We don't end this till September.
Well, let me ask you guys this because this is something I always struggle with. When you go on vacation, you leave your home for – several days.
Okay.
Yeah.
What do you leave the thermostat on during the summer?
78.
You just turn it off.
Yeah.
So you come back and it's like 90 degrees in your house.
Yeah, and then you open your windows, turn on the fan, air it out a little bit, and then you hit the air conditioner on.
See, I leave it at like 80.
I've heard 78 is a good number. Don't know why.
So I'm within the realm of reasonableness.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the thing where, like, you get back in the house and you know that there has not been much cool air going, but hey, you just give it a little bit of time and it circulates back. But I feel like that number doesn't do much to give heat or to give too much air right there in the middle.
We had something like 10 years ago, I remember. I don't remember if it was the hailstorm or something else, but there was a big power outage. It might have been the hailstorms. The power was out everywhere for a long time, and it was like well over a day. And so it's the middle of summer, right? And it's just sweltering in the house. We've got the windows open, but that's about it. And I'm asleep at like 2 a.m. And it's like 90 degrees out. So usually I'm a pajama bottoms or shorts and t-shirt kind of guy in bed. But it's so hot, I'm sleeping in my drawers, okay? It's
straight
like
boxers.
It's 2 a.m. I hear somebody beating on the front door of the house. I stagger out there, and I was so tired. I just didn't think. I opened the door and start talking. I just sit there in my underwear. There's a dude from KUB, and he's asking me all these complicated questions about my home and what electric, like how long. And I'm I don't know, man. Just turn it back on. It's so hot in here. And they're like, okay, let's get the hell away from this dude in his underwear.
This dude is out of it. He is out.
We got to get his electric. He's not even making any sense. We got to get his AC back on for him.
He's gone completely unproductive.
Oh, it was so hot.
We've lost him from humanity.
Miserable. All right. Record Ridge Barbecue smoking hot question of the day. What is the appropriate setting for the thermostat in your home during the summer?
Wow, people take this so seriously. We're going to get a lot of
it would be controversial?
Oh, yeah. Always. Always.
What is yours?
72. I was right there with you. I'll go 70 to 73.
Huck?
It depends who's home. If my wife is there, it's going to be at 73, probably. If it's me, it's going to be 68.
68
wow.
degrees.
When I was in college.
Dude.
That's completely insane.
We kept our apartment at 65 in college.
Why?
We like the cold.
I used to be like that. I used to be of your kind.
Wow,
my
you guys
kind?
Are crazy.
Yes.
What does that mean?
Cold-blooded.
Oh.
Where do you like to keep the bear's den at, Bear?
It stays at like 71.
71.
Yeah, it depends. Like if I come in and I've been real hot, I'll kick it up a couple of notches to like 73 or 74. That's the other thing. Like if you come in from outside and it's been like 98 or 100, how you can get here during the summer, and you walk inside and it's 20 degrees to 25 degrees cooler, you really don't have to have it down that low.
Already getting some interesting responses on social media. Stay with us. The Drive continues. Fan Run Radio. We're back with more right after this. The Drive.